Dr. Alan Leica here, and I'd like to welcome you to How to Live a Fantastic Life show, where we will be discussing the important aspects of your life. We hope to inspire you to live the best life you can. Get out of your comfort zone and explore the awesome world around you. Break through your barriers. Take inspired action. Use the difficulties in your life to achieve the best version of you. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a very special guest who's visiting us from the other side of the pond over in Ireland. His name is Dr. Connor, and he is the number one best-selling author of The Gym Upstairs, The Neurosciences of Future Champions. He works with leading high-performance competitors to help them eliminate their stress and instead replace this with maximized overall potential. How are you doing, Dr. Connor?
I'm fantastic. Thank you so much for having me, Alan.
You're welcome. So how did you get on this path and what is your upbringing to bring you there?
Well, once upon a time in Ireland, and it was a very different place for sure, Catholic Ireland, when I was growing up in the 1980s. Well, essentially, I was a sports mad child, tall, athletic, and had ability. And so just dedicated myself to sport and becoming better at everything I did. And simultaneously, the internet was just coming on stream, even though it was the old chunky dial-up connection, you know, where you literally had to wait 5 or 10 minutes before you'd get a glimpse of a web page. And so that was coming on stream roughly when I was my late teens, when I was coming close to the end of school. And so obviously, you know, the World Wide Web, the information that was there. And as a young person, it was a huge kind of huge, just welcome to the adult world as such. And so I, being a person who wanted to play sport, wanted to play to my best, wanted to do better, all that kind of stuff. Essentially, I looked at all the information I could find with regard to what I was doing, how I was doing it, and so on. And also, I was a great reader, just going back to the ordinary reading of, you know, buying books and that, and just reading them, going to the library, that kind of stuff. But I wasn't great at school. I wasn't a huge person or fan of high school. And I was also playing a lot of sport, as said, but I got injured. And so by the time of my late teens, I couldn't go any further physically. And the traditional medics didn't know what to do. They didn't know what was wrong with me. And so I kind of said to myself, well, I need to take it into my own hands here, and literally started looking online for, you know, different therapies or different things that could help me, or what was wrong with me, diagnosis. And I suppose nowadays people do a lot of self-diagnosis, which isn't the greatest thing either. But, you know, I was learning. I was trying to figure it all out and also learning about the world of things that's out there. And so I realized, just to get through these things, get through kind of the unknown, because when you're very young, and again, traditionally, if people are, you know, you do what the doctor says. And if the doctors don't know or can't figure it out. And I was, by the way, getting lots of different things happening. It eventually turned out to be scoliosis. The spine was twisted. And as I said, I was big and strong, and I was playing just above my age group, and even like at the adult level when I was like 15 years of age. And so therefore, I was training and exposed to the practice drills and the exposure of just the harshness of that type of training. And so that was breaking down my body even more. And so I was getting more cramped, more pain. I ended up in chronic pain and not knowing what to do. And so essentially, as I said, I took things into my own hands and learned and realized the mind, body, spirit that is there, and mind, body connection more so that is there. And all of those things that I looked at, you know, some of them helped me, some of them didn't. But I got so far into it that I decided, hey, you know what? I'll use myself as a crash test dummy. Essentially, I have to, because it's cheaper, isn't it, to be able to kind of figure it out and do things for yourself rather than kind of going to all these therapists. But I did go to so many people in my 20s, I would say tens of thousands of the equivalent of dollars that I went to, and just went everywhere and anywhere to go to a great therapist. Then it was known as maybe alternative therapies. Thankfully, a lot of them now are known as complementary therapies. And even a little bit of research I did during the pandemic, the early doors of the pandemic, where I asked a lot of people with regard to, you know, the unknown virus at the time and what was going on, and said, would you prefer to be looking at or to be healed or cured or finding improvement in alternative therapies or complementary therapies or traditional medical therapies? And people were kind of basically, I don't care, you know, I just want to figure it out, or, you know, find out what the answer to this is. And that's the way I was at the time. I was just growing up, getting into my young adult years, and figuring out that I was not feeling the way others were feeling, insofar as I felt more closed in my mind with regard to the possibilities of the future. I wouldn't say I was depressed or anything like that, but certainly I felt that my body and my mind were in sync, and that this was what a lot of young people were going through. But in fact, they weren't. They were more vivacious, they had more energy, they had more hope with regard to, and, you know, an expansion of hope with regard to going here, going there. I was nervous about traveling because literally I would sit, you know, in one place for so long, and then I'd have like huge amounts of pain, or if I twisted and turned and things like that. And because I was big, it wasn't that easy as well. So there was all these different things you had to contemplate. And it was really was a more narrow mind frame than a well person as such. So yeah, that's essentially my background, I think.
Interesting. So you went on and became a doctor. In which field are you qualified?
Yeah, so I didn't go the traditional medical route, obviously, because it didn't lend initially to my research with regard to what was wrong with me. And so I started looking at all the alternative stuff and complementary stuff. And I swore to myself, you know what? I was getting little bits of improvements here and there. And so it was like, you know, two steps forward, one step back. But it was better than actually, you know, standing still or going back. And so, as I said, I was a crash test dummy for everything. I did everything on myself and took things into my own hands, probably illegally and against the insurance. And so I decided, if I qualified everything that actually helps me, therefore I can actually help others. It's that simple, you know, with my experience with having gone through it myself. And so I ended up in teaching initially. And so I became a high school teacher. Then I became an elementary teacher. Then I became into special education. And there was a lot of neurological problems there, psychological problems. And then with regard to all the alternative stuff I was doing, it was the mind-body connection, all of that. And they all kind of came together. And so I did so many things. Honestly, if I started listing them right now, it would be crazy. But I did social psychology with regard to my PhD. I did neuroscience as a postdoc. So there's a lot of things in between. And so I basically tried to cover and touch every base. But I found huge elements with regard to, you know, the psychology and the neuroscience, because there's the brain-body connection there as well.
Well, it is. And it's interesting. You know, you had a physical disability in a scoliosis, yet you were able to perform better because you got your psyche and your brain in line with helping you. And I think that's true of all performers. You know, there are gifted people in this world, and you and I know them. They are people that really have the physical abilities to make themselves the best. But without being in the highest frames for their mental state, they never achieve that degree of performance. And I think, you know, I'm a hockey fanatic, and I love the fact that in Edmonton, the city where I live, we've had two of the greatest players in my existence, Wayne Gretzky and Connor McDavid. But each of them came to it, but they were not made to be that great. They keep on achieving a higher level because of who they are. They keep on perfecting it more and more and more.
Yeah, it's funny. It's not until you're faced with adversity that you have to make that decision, and you have to kind of look at it as a challenge, or look at it as something that's going to drag you down. And I think if we look at the research nowadays all around, not just in sport, but in with regard to any profession and career out there, a lot of the younger people are lacking that kind of ability to problem solve. And so we need to be able to look at problems in a way, and personalize problems in a way that is an opportunity rather than a challenge. That old saying within the Chinese language that there is an opportunity also in a big, big problem. And like, if you think about it, we're in a competitive world. And like you said, sport there, Gretzky and so on. I mean, these guys, you sink or swim, you're very, very little between game to actually improve. So if things don't go well for you, and it's the same in your work world, if you don't perform well today, you have to pull up your socks by tomorrow or you're in trouble, right? Or at least you have to see, if you have an empathetic manager or boss or coach, you have to be showing some form of wanting to improve, eagerness to improve, enthusiasm, positivity, wanting to research.
And you know, one of my favorite stories about Wayne Gretzky, which I heard from a great sportscaster, is Wayne Gretzky went into the boards and he got the puck there. And a defender for the other team was coming and was going to nail him into the boards. Wayne Gretzky passed the puck back to a player by the name of Yari Curry, and Yari Curry put it in the net. Wayne Gretzky then moved out of the way, and the defender ran into the boards and knocked himself unconscious. Now, after the game, Wayne was asked, how did you know this was coming? He said, I could see it. He said, and the interviewer said, how? He said, I looked in the glass. There he was. Yeah, now, how many people have it in their wherewithal that know that this big hit is coming to actually move the puck back, score the goal, move out of the way, and hurt the person that's going to hurt you?
Well, that's fantastic. You know, that reminds me, and I've said this to clients too, that when I was doing the driver's test, you know, way back when, and when you're young as a driver, you often, especially as a male, you know, the insurance companies will tell you this, that a lot of males are kind of a little bit more overeager. They want to go faster. They want to be in a car now. They want their own car and so on. And I remember doing a test, and I passed my test. I got my license. And then we did this insurance test. It was a private insurance broker, and they wanted us to perhaps do this private test a little bit more stringent, a little more strict, so they could kind of find out exactly how good a driver you really are. And then we'll give you a benefit or a decrease of up to 50% off on your insurance. And so we went in, I remember, and there was a guy with me who was playing sport with me at the time. And he was a top baller at the time as well. And so we were looking at this big kind of modernized screen at the time, which was very unusual, where we were looking at simulations of driving accidents or potential pitfalls on the road and that. And I remember the question was asked, like, if you're in the driver's seat and the different angles from the camera, it was like, what can you see in the road? That was just the question. And he was asked what he could see on the road. And essentially he was saying, well, I can see the blue car in front. I can see the turn off on the left, that kind of thing. And then I was asked, and I referred to the things behind me, you know, because I was looking not only at the camera of where the driver was looking at out in front, but also the reflection, like you said, of the rear view mirror. And I could see things in that. And it was funny. It struck with me, even though I was like getting all cramped and injured and chronic pain and that, and he was playing up at the top level, I had played against him many times. We had actually been you know, in close and tackled each other. And even though he was good in some areas of his play, he was very much predictable in the way he moved. So you only move in what you see. And as we know, if you can move, say in ball sports, if you can move towards the ball that bit quicker, that bit faster, and just like your story there, if you can see things happening a split second before the other person neurologically, then your body will just essentially move to what you can see. And so even when the pressure is on, that's the beauty of this. You know, a lot of things, like you said before, a lot of athletes, a lot of high performers can actually have the physical ability. But to be able to go out there and do it under the lights, with the crowd, with the atmosphere, that moment of pressure, to be able to do consistently and sustainably well, that's the difference between great and just good athletes.
Exactly. And I think the greatness comes in that they consistently perform at that level, that the number of errors they make are far less, that their consistency is at a higher level than anybody else's. And that's what takes the mental dynamics to get them there, because the mental fine tuning is the thing they can control. Yes, they have the gifts of physical strength and certain prowess, and they can work on that so many hours a day, But the mental ability to know that you can make a difference is the one thing that changes the loser to the winner, so to speak.
Absolutely. And it's funny because just this morning, I received a text message from a client of mine, a very young athlete who's entering into the professional game. Now, there's a lot of pressure on them with regard to where they come from. And a lot of people think, what are you trying to be a professional sports person in that regard for? You know, it's not your game kind of thing. But they have improved so much. It's incredible. They've bought in now to the mental exercises, the things that we're doing, and was requesting even more work, more time to spend on it. Now, they had a huge challenge, massive challenge, where other people within their realm, within their team, and that in this season have not done their jobs, have not done really what theoretically they should do in that sport to allow this person to play to their best. And you know, they know it's not their fault. So what can they do? And so they want to improve. All you can do at the end of the day, especially in team sport, again, in employment, you might have a boss you don't like or employees around you that aren't pulling the weight. All you can do is look after how you perceive things and how you react to things as well. So if you can maximize all of those things, you decrease the amount of pressure that you have within your realm in a given moment of time. And so you can then, like you said about Wayne Gretzky in the mirror and all of that, you can see things and see things clearer. Because if a lot of people just can't see things, they don't have vision. If we look at, say, entrepreneurs or anybody that has changed the world, you know, great vision, we call them great visionaries, like people who actually can see. So if you can see things presently and also one step ahead of others, that's all you need. Think about the darkness. If many are going through the darkness and there's a chink of light and you can kind of allow that and trust that to go along your path, you're going to be ahead all of the time.
Exactly. And I think that most people don't realize that ability to see things is something you can learn, is something that you can see happen as time goes on, that you can learn the art of visualization by practicing and rehearsing it. Just like you can become stronger by doing repetitions on lifting weights or doing sit-ups or riding a bicycle. This is a skill that you can learn by doing it over and over and over again.
Yeah. And you know, the thing about it is, it's funny if somebody's watching right now or viewing things and saying, well, you know what, I'm just going to close my eyes and do this. That's fantastic. Right? That's like going to a great speech and going, oh, fantastic, this motivator. Let's just do this. It's easy. But you'll probably close your eyes and suddenly you have all of this going on. It's like a disco or disco balls or, you know, loud music in your head. It's like being in the cinema and it's just chaotic. And a lot of that, I think, is coming in the last few years. We mentioned the internet there and the smartphones or the iPhones and things like that. What we're putting into our bodies as food or as water or what we drink is a fuel. It's going to be what we, you know, process and put out, essentially. Who we hang around with is going to be what we become, what we think, and how we value or form our opinions. It's the same way with the internet or phones or our exposure to television or media or whatever else. So if we are putting in junk, for example, just like lots of stuff that just doesn't really educate you or doesn't bring you forward, that's what's going to come out of you eventually. So if you're trying to close your eyes right now and just visualize, like you said, you have to realize you have to get to a place of silence first. You have to get to a place of actually seeing the darkness that it is me and my eyes closed. A lot of people are hyper-stressed. We have a lot of anxiety in this world. Even athletes, like you mentioned, top-class athletes have anxieties in this world. And over the last few years, it's funny how it's coordinated with, again, the internet and all of the mass production of media. And everybody can be on media now. And yet a lot of people are stressed in the Western world. So if you can, again, if you think of the sea of competitors in your field, if you can do just as you said, if you can consistently, sustainably put yourself in that place, even just to begin closing your eyes, to consistently say, hey, this time of the day in the morning time when my mind is fresh, when I'm not exposed to all that media, if I can just sit, if I can kind of close my eyes and breathe, just do that for a while and see where that takes you. Because it's funny, your brainwaves and meditation and visualization, all of these great things. And by the way, these are thousands of years old in many ways. many times you slip into them. It just happens, right? So if you consistently close your eyes and get into a comfortable position every day at a certain time, your body, your brain, everything becomes more regulated. And when it does, once you're patient and you understand that this is, this is proven. So many, many millions and billions of people have done this over the sands of time. Believe it or not, your brain waves can shift quite profoundly, very suddenly. And before you know it, you look at the time and go, wow, that's 20 minutes gone. Wow, how did that happen? That didn't. In the same way we fall asleep and we kind of, involuntarily fall asleep if we're reading a book or watching TV or something and it's afternoon. We wake up 10, 20 minutes later. Oh, you look at your watch. Oh, that was a cat nap. I didn't know I was that, tired. So yes, we have the capability, like you said, within us, and yet too many of us don't use the ability we have.
Exactly. Now, you've written a book on how to achieve high performance. Can you tell us a little bit about that book?
Yeah, it's called The Gym Upstairs. And although it's set in the professional sporting environment with an awful lot of firsthand research of professional sports people from the Major League Baseball, the NFL, NBA, the Olympics, Olympic champions, the English Premiership in soccer, the Rugby World Cup, Champions League in soccer in Europe as well. All of those people, these great champions, these great people who have discovered, figured out, had problems, got over them, and become the winners that they are. All of those great people, and this huge research with regard to what's going on in the field of pressure and what can we do to get that little bit more, that little bit inch more, that edge, that centimeter, that's, just that little bit extra to get over the line with regard to performing at the highest level. And it's all in the book there. And as I said, all of these questions and research that has been done has, there's a lot of strategies in it as well with regard, not just visualizations and meditations, but other things that you can do chapter to chapter to improve your ability. And it's not just for sports people. It's also for people in any high performance area, including any aspect of work or career.
I think that is the key. When you're learning, when you're training, you need a couple of things. One is you need good books to help get you on the way. Good books are often there to guide you, but that's often not enough. It's often not the complete things that you need. I think you need a trainer. I think very much training is in part of every professional athlete's existence. And that trainer needs a coach, and that coach is very important. What is your take on that?
I think you're right. I think all we have to do is look at the last 2-3 years. And if anybody's even listening or watching this podcast in the future in 5-10 years, I'm referring to COVID-19 and when it first hit. And I think if we look at the outcome, even now, and who knows in a few years' time, but with regard to the world of people, how many people have reacted proactively to the shock, the horror of what went on, not knowing they could see people, not knowing they could go to their regular work or job, not knowing they could do their regular routine, essentially, in the early months of 2020. And so what happens then is you adopt a routine and a habit. Right. And all of everything we're saying here is to positively adopt a routine and a habit going forward with regard to your mental preparation. And so most people didn't, they just kind of stayed, in their status quo, and they just kind of waited for changes to happen with the virus. Some, and a very smaller amount of people, would have taken the bull by the horns and sorted their life out or got ahead in some way of the sea of people or competitors that are in their realm. And so if you can kind of just take the action and start saying to yourself, right, I need to, like you said, grab that book or research a little bit more or connect with people. And that's the one thing in COVID-19. We didn't connect enough with people. And the science is clear here as well. If we don't connect enough with people, we look at older people with regard to Alzheimer's, dementia, things like that. They're not connecting enough with people. And so what happens is your brain doesn't actually work those brain circuits enough, right? And so that has happened to human beings in the last couple of years. So you need the connection. You need to be honest with that coach, that person, you need to be able to kind of open up, be authentic. And one person I can honestly say has been really authentic and very truthful in their dealings with me is a guy called Ian Hill. And I believe he was on your show. And Ian is trying to be the oldest man to become the Division One college footballer ever, right? At 57 years of age, which is absolutely crazy when you think about it. He's up against 17-year-olds that in a very physical combative sport, he's going to, and it's going to happen for sure. But, and he won't mind me saying this, Ian was very, very honest with me when we worked one-to-one, and we work regularly one-to-one as well. But you have to get to the bottom of what's in your head, what's going on. And you have another human being with the skills to eke it out of you, to be able to help you, to support you so that you know they're there. And this can go on as well with regard to, you know, you might have great relationships in your life. You might have a husband, a wife, partner, whatever else, and they're very close and supportive. But sometimes it's nice to just go off at somebody who has been there, done that, has the experience, has the techniques, has the strategies. And plus, you might want to put that into your intimate relationship, maybe things from the past as well. And so it's really, really important, I think, that connective part with another person. And you're also accountable to them, right? If you give them the power to say, call you out or whatever, if you're not doing the work in the future, you're accountable to them. And I think that's priceless.
Dr. Connor, this show is called the How to Live a Fantastic Life Show. How can a high performer live a fantastic life?
I think that number one, you need to decide how you want to live your life. What is your mentioned vision? What is your vision? What is your, people say, what is your big why? And it's so true. Like, what do you want to look back on when you're an old person? When you're sitting in that armchair, you're looking back, you're looking at perhaps photographs on the mantelpiece and you're, you know, remembering things that you did or tried to do. Don't be afraid to fail is another thing. If you fail, you learn. That's a great thing. You know, you mentioned great people in this particular interview. There's, I'm sure they have failed more than most, but it's how you react to that. And always back yourself. Have confidence that you have the ability. You are born with unbelievable ability. If you can hear, if you can watch this now, you have two senses that if you feed them correctly, they're going to bring you to where you want to go, because they're just essentially tentacles of your brain. And the brain is a huge capacity to bring you and to think into your future. And focus on what you really want. And believe it or not, it will come.
Excellent. Dr. Connor, can you tell people how they can find a copy of their book and how they can find out more about you?
Yeah, sure, Dr. Allen. So basically, if you go onto Amazon, any of the Amazon websites, it's under the books. It's The Gym Upstairs, Gym GYM. So it's just like you're working out in the physical gym, except you're working out upstairs. So The Gym Upstairs, or if you want a signed copy anywhere in the world, you can go to my website on docconnor.com. That's docconnor.com. And there's loads of free stuff there as well, courses, and you can get in touch with me. By the way, if you just need like something to get the ball rolling, a question answered, or you want a referral to somebody else, don't be afraid to reach out. It's on my website, docconnor.com, docconnor.com. And I'll put you in touch with anybody if I can.
Excellent. Thank you, Dr. Connor. It really was a pleasure talking to you. Your information is going to help a lot of people today. And ladies and gentlemen, make sure you reach out for help. You can reach out to me at my website, drallenlyka.com, D-R-A-L-L-E-N, Lyka, L-Y-C-K-A.com. And make sure you get a golden pearl from me each and every week. Sign up for it, and I'll send it to you every Tuesday. Bye for now.
You've been listening to How to Live a Fantastic Life. Be sure and pick up a copy of Dr. Lyka's book, The Secrets to Living a Fantastic Life, on Amazon.com. And you'll want to subscribe right here on this page so you don't miss a single episode. Have a fantastic day.